And welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Earlier this year, Utah lawmakers brought a resolution to a hard-fought battle over how to pay for police services in Salt Lake County. Under a new law, Salt Lake County must get rid of a controversial fee charged for policing and figure out another way to pay for it. One organization that was happy to see that change is the Utah Taxpayers Association, an influential watchdog group that will soon hold its annual Taxes Now conference coming up on Monday the 23rd. Joining me to discuss this resolution to the UPD and the association's attempts to put an end to the restaurant tax in Utah is Vice President Royce Van Tassel. Royce, it's good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here and to be with your listeners today.
And Royce, before we get into the specifics of the UPD and other issues we'll talk about today, tell me about the highlights of your upcoming conference on the 23rd.
Well, the big issues that we're going to be talking about are a couple of the ones you've already mentioned, the police fee, the restaurant tax. But roughly a third of our entire agenda is just going to look at the education reform issues that the tax or that the Taxpayers Association supported and that the legislature implemented, and to sort of say, what are the next steps going to be? There will also be a lot of tax issues that the legislature dealt with and what directions the legislature is going to be going with tax policy.
And those education reform issues include things like school grading. What are some of the others?
We've got school grading. We've got the statewide online education plan. Yep. We've got a number of issues where the legislature tried to say taxpayers should, for example, be paying for teachers' unions, their representative, when they're doing union work. If they're doing school district work, that's one thing. But taxpayers shouldn't be paying the union representative for work that is just for the union. That's not who they represent. They represent the taxpayer dollars should pay for taxpayer projects, not union projects.
And Senator Mike Lee will be speaking as well?
He will be the keynote speaker. It's actually the first time in at least my memory when we've had a sitting U.S. senator speaking to the Taxpayers Association's conference. So it's something of a rarity. We're quite pleased about that.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to Salt Lake County's Unified Police Department, Royce, specifically, your organization has been very outspoken against the county's decision a few years ago to impose a fee on the unincorporated parts of the county to make up for a $13 million loss in sales tax revenue during the recession. Why do you think this is such an important issue here in the county?
Well, it simply doesn't make sense on a couple of different levels. First of all, at the very time when taxpayers are having the most difficult time making ends meet, they're literally living paycheck to paycheck, that Salt Lake County felt it was necessary to come in and charge them another couple hundred dollars a year for services that should be provided regardless. The reality is that police services are a public good. They're something that should be paid for out of the property tax. Salt Lake County didn't want to go through the pain that is a property tax increase and chose not to do that. Their solution was to say, we're going to just call it a fee and tell you that we'll tack this onto your bill and you'll get it every quarter, and you should just be happy about that. It wasn't the right process. It wasn't the right thing to do. And we're grateful that the legislature, and frankly, working with the Salt Lake County Council, was able to come to a resolution this year about how to get rid of that.
Now, regarding the $13 million, the county has said they had to impose the fee because it was too late in the year to meet the statutory deadline for passing a tax increase. And if they couldn't come up with the revenue some other way, it would have meant, you know, huge, huge layoffs. Is that a valid argument or no?
It's true that it's true that sales tax revenue dropped significantly to the county's municipal services fund, but they were well aware in the 2 and 3 months prior to when they needed to hold that truth and taxation hearing that these drops were coming. Mm-hmm. And there's simply no evidence to suggest that they couldn't have gone and held the property tax increase and the associated public hearing that was necessary.
Now, as you mentioned, the legislature worked with the county to come up with a solution here. I think they have until the end of 2012 to come up with an alternative. But it's also brought up the argument from Mayor Peter Caroon, for example, that this is an example of the state imposing its will on the county the same way the federal government does to the state. Any truth to that argument or no?
Well, I think it's important to remember that Salt Lake County, like every other county, every other city, is a creature of the state. It was created by the states. Mm-hmm. They have all of their authority derives from the state. And so for the state to come in and say, no, you've gone a step too far is entirely appropriate.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Royce Van Tassel, Vice President of the Utah Taxpayers Association. Switching topics here, Royce, your organization recently filed a lawsuit in Utah County to abolish the restaurant tax, claiming it's unconstitutional. Well, first, let's clarify. How big a tax is this, and how is it imposed exactly?
Everybody who goes into McDonald's mm-hmm. pays a 1% tax on everything that they purchase there. I happen to live out in Eagle Mountain. If I drive out and I want to go mountain biking or I want to go skiing, on my way out, I'll pass a Maverick and I'll pass a McDonald's in the morning where I can get the same breakfast burrito and the same orange juice or soda. But if I buy it at McDonald's, I pay a 1% tax. If I buy it at Maverick, I don't. These are two entities in the exact same industry mm-hmm. that one is being treated to a benefit. I mean, they don't have to pay the tax,
right.
Whereas if their competitor certainly does. And on those grounds, we've filed suit, as you noted, that the restaurant tax violates the state and federal constitution.
Is there something in the Constitution, though, that prohibits such discrimination? I'm not entirely sure there is.
Oh, absolutely. It's the Equal Protection Clause, and it says that you can't treat similarly situated entities differently. Mm-hmm. It's no different here than it would be in any other traditional equal protection claim that we see all the time.
Do you have the support of groups like the Restaurant Association and others on your side?
The Restaurant Association supports that. We've got taxpayers across the state that are supportive of this. The real solution here, and one that we hope can be worked out, is to say that because counties are the ones that impose this tax,
right.
And the question is, are they using it in ways that are a state obligation or not? We, as an association, brought a proposal to the counties during the last session that said, if you convert this 1% restaurant tax only on purchases made at restaurants and instead put it on all goods and services, it translates into about a 0.07% sales tax increment. Mm-hmm. If you convert that and at the same time put the sales tax back on food, you could see a net decrease in the sales tax rate, and the counties would have gotten every dollar, every penny that they've always gotten. Unfortunately, the counties rejected the offer, and so the lawsuit continues.
Why file the suit in Utah County specifically?
You know, we put names of the counties in a hat, and Utah County came out first, so there was no rhyme or reason to that.
While we're talking about food, Royce, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Taxpayers Association supported a bill during the legislative session that would have increased the food tax for goods purchased at the grocery store while lowering the sales tax by a small amount. Did you support that, and if so, why?
Well, it was actually part of the proposal that we put together to eliminate the restaurant tax. We wanted to the basic idea in tax policy mm-hmm. is to have a broad base and a low rate. And unfortunately, what the legislature did when they took the sales tax off on food, or at least a large part of it, was to say, we're going to narrow the base, and then therefore we have to raise the rate. And so as an association, we said this year we should be broadening the base and lowering the rate to provide a more stable tax revenue source.
So this bill, I believe, passed out of the Senate, then died in the House after a rather large rally where many said this would have a disproportionate impact on the poor, you know, food being a basic necessity. How do you respond to that argument?
Well, the proposal that the Taxpayers Association backed, and you can go back and look at the, I think it was the January newsletter where we talked about that at mm-hmm. UtahTaxpayers.org, where we proposed providing a rebate mm-hmm. for low-income families to receive. And I want to say it was some statewide. It would have been about $17 million, which is roughly what that impact for those low-income families would have been.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW. My guest is Royce Van Tassel. He is Vice President of the Utah Taxpayers Association. Royce, there's been a big conversation in recent weeks when it comes to transportation funding in this state, with lawmakers passing SB 229 to earmark funds for transportation. Governor vetoed it. They came back and overrided his veto. But it sparked this conversation about the gasoline tax in the state, how it has not been increased in many years, and how many say that it simply hasn't kept up to the point where we can't adequately maintain our roads. So what are your thoughts when it comes to raising the gas tax in Utah?
The Taxpayers Association has for a long time said that we need to do a better job of funding transportation through user-like fees. The closest we've come so far is the gasoline tax. And as you point out, I think it's been since 1997 or 1998 that the gas tax has increased. We have suggested as recently as 2 or 3 years ago that the state ought to increase the gas tax by a quarter a gallon and then offset the corporate or the individual and corporate income taxes by an equal amount. Our estimates at the time were that that would have raised about $350 million in gas taxes, and then you lower the corporate income tax, the individual income tax, by the same amount, so that it's a net tax. There's no net tax increase.
Would the lowering of the income tax bring up the problem of cutting public education funding?
Actually, I think just the opposite, because it would make the state that much more attractive. We've certainly seen the disparate difference in income tax rates in California versus here in Utah has brought a lot of new investment, whether you're talking about Twitter, eBay, Adobe. A lot of companies are coming here and saying that normally would have gone to California. That's where their homes are. But because Utah has made itself very attractive for business investment, by having a lower income tax rate, we've got a lot of new investment coming in here. That means more sales tax revenue. That means no property tax revenue. Frankly, it means more income tax revenue, because as people come, they're going to be earning a salary, and they'll pay income tax on that as well. All of that is going to support the public education system that we need.
While we're talking about user fees for transportation, in the past you've talked about this idea of congestion pricing that has taken place in other states, I believe, like Texas, for example. If you drive down I-15, you know, it's 2 in the afternoon, it's clear as day, for example. Maybe you're not charged anything for doing so, but if it's the most congested time of day, perhaps a fee of, you know, 50 cents or 75 cents. We've seen that now with the express lane. Do you think there should be an effort to perhaps expand that further?
We've seen, frankly, wonderful results from Utah's hot lane, where if you want to get in that lane, you can do so, and the price goes up and down depending on how much traffic is in there. I think the high end, it's up to $1.25. On the low end, it's $0.25. And the studies I've seen indicate that the difference in speed and therefore throughput in that lane versus the others is something like 10 miles per hour. It's something that's been a wonderful success. We applaud UDOT for the work that they've done there, and hope that we can expand that across the state and to some of the other roads in the Metro Salt Lake Valley area.
Should it be something limited to the express lane, or should it apply to, you know, the highway itself?
Well, I don't know that it's appropriate to do it on the entire highway. Mm-hmm. That's a separate conversation. There have been efforts to turn an entire freeway into a toll lane, and it's been successful in places where it's been tried. Whether or not Utah is to a point where we need to do that is an open question.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW, and my guest is Royce Van Tassel. He's the vice president of the Utah Taxpayers Association, which has its annual Texas Now conference coming up on Monday, May 23rd. Getting to a couple more topics today here, Royce, there's been a big conversation in recent years in Utah about privatization, especially when it comes to the state liquor stores. We even have a specific bill proposal now from Representative Ryan Wilcox to privatize the state's stores, especially with you know, this whole conversation about the state before having to close many stores that in the end has not happened so far. What's your position on this? Is this something that's worth serious consideration?
You know, the state has a privatization policy board composed of members of the public, representatives from the from the public sector, mm-hmm. as well as private sector representatives. They've been studying this issue for the last year and a half, and have some, I think, some important findings to add to the discussion. One, they've noted that in states where you have privatized some portion of the retail distribution of alcohol, mm-hmm. there's no increase in alcohol-related fatalities or accidents. That's right. An important thing, because the justification that's always given for why the state has to be in control of alcohol and alcohol sales at the retail level is that if we don't have that, we're going to have more people dying on the streets. And the evidence simply doesn't support that. Utah's frankly in a minority of states across the country that controls alcohol distribution from the wholesale to the retail side.
Right.
It's something that there is an opportunity to evaluate whether or not that will increase the amount of money that the state can get from alcohol. Certainly that's something that has been attractive to control states. I think last year it was something like $280 million in tax revenue came from alcohol sales to the state. It's certainly something that we need to preserve, because a lot of that money goes into our public education system. But there's no reason inherently why the state can't continue to receive that revenue and still have somebody on the private sector managing that and thereby cut the costs to the state. For example, you don't need to have all of the people that are working in those stores being state employees. Mm-hmm. The private sector can assume those risks and is happy to, as long as we set up a system that works well for everybody.
Any other state-controlled operations that you think are also worth taking a look at privatizing?
I think that I know that Representative Harper asked the Privatization Policy Board to evaluate whether or not the state should partner with the private sector in determining who's eligible for various welfare programs. It's something that's been done in many states across the country. Mm-hmm. It's a decision that that I know the Privatization Policy Board is going to be looking at. Another thing, we've heard a lot of talk recently in the news about the long wait lines that we have at the DMV. Mm-hmm. It's sort of surprising to me that Smith's or Costco or a Fresh Market, who have literally tens of thousands of products, manage to get people through there very, very quickly, where at the DMV, you can sometimes have wait lines that go 2 and 3 hours, and they've got 10, 15, maybe 20 products that have to be cared for. It seems to me that there's an opportunity to learn some lessons. There may be an opportunity to privatize or partner with the private sector to make that experience more beneficial for the consumer.
Now, there hasn't been too broad a conversation on this, but I did read a column in one of your newsletters by your president, Howard Stevenson, about the issue of privatizing prisons, or at least prison operations, which certainly is a very tricky road to go down. What do you think of that?
Certainly, it's something that's been done with great success across the country. It's not something that Utah has done just yet,
right.
But it's certainly open the conversation. We should have it.
And finally, Royce, I want to talk about Utopia, because your organization has been very involved in this. This is, of course, the publicly funded fiber optic network we see in West Valley City and many other cities, not Salt Lake City, however. Wouldn't want to be the public relations person for them right now. That would probably not be a very fun job. But your organization has been very against this from pretty much the beginning. Why do you feel Utopia is such a big deal?
Well, first of all, if you can open up, there's a basic test that Mitch Daniels back in Indiana, Stephen Goldsmith in Indianapolis, and many others have applied. It's something that, unfortunately, the cities in Utopia didn't apply. It says that if you can open up the yellow pages and find a private sector provider that will offer a good or service, the state or the city, your local school district, they don't need to be doing it. And unfortunately, the 11 cities that have pledged money for Utopia didn't do that. They didn't realize that there are literally hundreds of millions, even billions of dollars a year being provided by the private sector, people competing to provide telecommunication services of all sorts to people in the to the average Joe citizen. For some reason, they felt like they could come in and compete in this highly competitive business and succeed. That their performance to date over the past 9 years that they've been in existence, mm-hmm. says something very different. If you look at the most recent newsletter that the Taxpayers Association published at www.utahtaxpayers.org, you can see the budgets that you the operating budgets mm-hmm. that Utopia has projected over the past 6 years versus their actual performance over those 6 years. And it's remarkable how divergent those are. This is just sort of a very easy way of saying, how well do they actually accomplish what they say they're going to? Inevitably, they perform much worse than actual. Just to put in round numbers how bad they're doing, the net assets of Utopia as of the end of fiscal year 2010, so about 10 months ago, they were $166 million in the hole, meaning if you sold everything today, they would still owe their creditors $166 million. It is unconscionable, it is unfathomable that elected officials would endorse this kind of a boondoggle and put the taxpayers on the hook. If this was really such a good idea, then the city council members, the mayors, the city managers should be investing their own retirement, their children's college funds in this. Somehow I think that their analysis might be a little bit different.
Now, when it comes to the public versus private sector aspect, isn't the idea that although the infrastructure is publicly funded, the private sector, like X-Mission or other service providers, provide the actual service?
The again, you can go on today and find a half a dozen companies just here in Salt Lake City that have already built a network that provides these services. There is no need for the public to come in and pay for fiber, especially to every blessed home in those cities. It's a waste of taxpayer dollars, and it's something that they have proven time and again they fail at.
But even if it's a terrible idea, the locally elected officials made the decision to go with it, right?
They did, and that's unfortunate. And the taxpayers in those cities will be paying for that for the next 30 years.
Our guest has been Royce Van Tassel. He is the vice president of the Utah Taxpayers Association, and its Taxes Now conference will be coming up Monday the 23rd at the Little America Hotel here in Salt Lake City. Royce, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
This is Politics Up Close on KCBW.